Guys, I'm going to need all the travel lovers out there to listen the fuck up, because today I'm here to tell you about something that's going to change the game. I don't care if you're planning a trip, on a trip, or just daydreaming about being in Positano with a hot Italian man on one side and your Aperol spritz you're drinking on the other. Is this me? Maybe. Today, we're here to tell you about Well Traveled. Nina's actually a longtime user and member, so Nina, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, you guys, I am so excited about this. I couldn't be more thrilled that we are going to be partnering with them. I have seen this company really come from the ground up, and it is so amazing. This is perfect for everyone that you're trying to find the coolest restaurants, hotels, places to stay, the aesthetics, the vibe, all the different things. Like, I'm one of those people that literally would scour websites like Eater, Thrillist, Infatuation, like all these different ones, just to find the coolest places to go to dinner and whatever, anywhere that I was traveling. And this is literally all of that just in one place.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know about you guys, but between study abroad when I was younger and then like just traveling now, I have all these Google Docs flying around, and it's so much nicer to have them all in one place and organized and pretty.
It's amazing. And you can create like new lists. I have a Paris list. I have a New York list. I have a New York I want to try, like a New York date list, all these different ones. And it's so fun.
I love that. I mean, that's such a good idea. Think about New York City or all these other big cities. There are new places popping up all the time. Be a tourist in your own city. Explore somewhere new.
Also, the whole website is so aesthetically pleasing. Like, for my type A girlies out there, this site
super type A
is the greatest thing you've ever seen. And also, the coolest thing is I literally will sit there and plan an entire trip based off of recommendations. And then I find out that they're like also partnered. So by being a member, I get like chocolate covered strawberries on my hotel bed.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Amazing. So guys, please go check it out. Make your list, get the best recommendations from Well Traveled. You can go now to welltraveledclub.com. We'll have the link in the episode description. And if you use code WTFSUP, that's WTFSUP, you can get $30 off your first year of membership,
which is huge.
And to pay for a year of like recommendations and some of their partnership perks.
Yeah.
I think it's a no-brainer. Yep. Jinx. So guys, go check it out, and back to the episode. Hey guys, welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. It's Caitlin here.
And it's Neens, also known as Nina.
Guys, we are so like literally me texting Nina this morning. Nina's behind the awesome Kenan episode. This is the Kenan episode, but teaser video. And she was like working on it in very legitimate ways. And I was having an excitement panic attack, I would call it.
I was like,
I literally sent her a voice note. I was like, the sexual tension between me and releasing this video teaser right now.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. Like, apparently Caitlin's excited in other ways.
Yeah.
But we're really, really excited about
so excited.
This episode, this teaser. I am available for hire. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually way
Nina.
Too busy. Please don't hire me.
Oh my God. But yeah, we're so excited for this episode. Kenan gives a little background in the beginning as to how we got him on, but basically my friend Antonia, who's amazing, is friends with his business partner Johnny, so we all met and hung out, and Kenan's just like the nicest, sweetest, funniest dude ever, and
truly
also
amazing.
Just so well spoken.
Yeah, like so well spoken.
Yeah,
so intelligent. One of those conversations that I walked away from being like, I learned so much,
so
but I
much.
Also felt so heard. Like, as a person, I think you don't always expect that, or I guess that's the worry a lot of times with like bigger names or celebrities. And he is incredible and just such an amazing guy and really so supportive, and like can't speak more highly of him if I tried.
Yeah. I mean, we tried to literally like when he said yes to coming on and scheduled, I was like, I sent him the link to her merch. Shout out our merch. Go shop it.
Pretty lit.
It's really lit. The link's on our page. Kenan might be wearing it soon. But
true.
But basically, I sent him the link to be like, pick something out. And, you know,
on us, because it's so fucking nice you're coming on our podcast. And within 2 minutes, my merch girl texted me being like, why did Kenan Thompson just buy something? I was like, Kenan, we were going to give it to you. He's like, no, anything to support. So, you know, I mean,
pretty lit merch.
He talks about towards the end, but he and Johnny have this management company called Artists for Artists. And that's really what they're all about, is like being these bigger names, you know, these well-to-do artists are supporting new and emerging artists, which is me and Nina, obviously.
Obviously.
We're emerging.
We're emerging.
We're emerging.
We're blossoming.
We are blossoming as it's kind of we speak. But one last thing before the episode is, I mean, we got to address the fact that Kenan has been in the press this week for, you know, just being like, basically he was on Charlamagne's podcast and Charlamagne asked him about SNL potentially ending. Mm-hmm. There's no confirmations of anything. Kenan had like not heard of it, but was like, oh, really? Like, I guess that would make sense since it'd be the 50th season or whatever. But it was so funny because today my dad is like, Caitlin, I think my phone's been listening to me talk to you and like our friends about the Kenan episode because Kenan keeps coming up on my feed.
You're like, no, there is in fact press about him. I'm like, no, dad,
there's just press about him. Like, it's, he's like, are you sure the AI isn't listening? I'm like, it might be a combination. So
like, it could be one of the things, but
could be both.
No, it's great timing, but also, I mean, you'll hear it on any podcast, anything that Kenan does. The way he speaks about things really are just eloquently laid out. Yeah. So I think that it's great timing, but also you'll hear him touch on some topics in this. And
oh yeah, I mean, this is an evergreen episode. It was just so funny for my dad to say that. I'm like, no, dad, you're not special. But that's all to say, we're so appreciative of him. Thank you, Kenan, if you're listening. And guys, listen to the entire episode because swear to God, like the end, he does impressions. Like, it's every second is gold. So just listen all the way through.
Share your favorite parts.
Share it with your friends, your followers. Give us a review if you loved it. If you didn't love it, just
turn off
your
phone.
Go away.
Go on a walk. Rethink your actions.
And without further ado, here's the episode.
Here it is.
Woo!
Hey guys, today we're here to tell you about one of my favorite companies called Crush Tonic. So Crush Tonic was started by my friend Sally, who is an amazing, intelligent person. She's actually been on the podcast before. So after this episode, whichever one you're listening to, go back and check hers out. But she has this crazy story where basically she severely burnt herself cooking. And she was looking for all these different ways to speed up her healing process and eventually discovered collagen. So through that, it helped heal the scarring, but then she was also finding that her hair, her nails, and her skin were looking better than ever. So that's when she officially decided she wanted to share this secret with the world, and that's when she created her company, Crush Tonic. For those of you who don't know, at around 25, your body starts to lose its natural ability to produce collagen. So this impacts your skin, your hair, your nails, your bones, muscles, everything, and leads to issues like wrinkles, dark circles, thinning hair, and more. But all these effects can be avoided and even reversed by collagen. And she has these amazing packets that you can put into any drink. She has flavors so that you can add it to your coffee. That's the coffee flavor. She has matcha. And then she also has the original and unflavored packets if you just want to add it to whatever drink you have without it impacting the flavor at all. So it's awesome. And honestly, the company has taken off so much. They've partnered with and sold their products in stores like Sephora, Gilt, Kith, Erewhon, Equinox, JetBlue, and more. And soon they're even going to be available through QVC and Costco. So I highly recommend you guys check it out. They also, oh my God, they have these new anti-hair loss supplements that are in pill form and work wonders. They're made with ingestible keratin, which especially paired with the daily use of collagen, means no more 8-hour trips to the salon to get keratin treatment. Your hair is gonna look better than ever. So guys, go check it out. I promise you won't regret it. I'll put the link in the episode description, but basically you can just go over to crushtonic.com and use code WTFSUP, WTFSUP, for 20% off your first order and 50% off soon to be gone matcha and original crushes. All right, back to the episode.
Testing.
We're here at the Copa. Hello, hello. Am I one time for your mind? Oh,
ow. Yeah.
Making a little sound. Oh, tick, a bump. Mm. Ow. Yeah.
Can you scoot like a second so I don't sweat on you?
Absolutely.
I'm like,
everybody get cozy.
I know myself.
Way to get cozy. It's It's summer.
It's summer. We love
fire. Air conditioning only does so much in this place.
Yeah, it's working.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Fucks Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Nina Barnett.
And today we are joined by a casual household name, Keenan Thompson.
Looking very cash. Laid back. This is the most laid back experience.
He's just ever. Out here chilling on the couch. Listen. You know, as one does. But yeah. You don't need an introduction, but to give you one anyways. Keenan is an actor. He is the host of the You Already Know podcast.
Yeah, boom.
He's SNL's longest tenured cast member and the OG Nickelodeon star that we all grew up with. True. So welcome, Keenan. What the fuck's up? How are you?
Fuck's up, man. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
It's a beautiful, what is it, Friday?
Yeah, it's Friday, guys.
Friday. That's what's up. Yeah, we were just talking about like, how there's a lot of podcasts out there, and it's interesting which ones you end up like showing up for. So, you know, like I'm here to kind of explain to everyone because we actually
why are you on this podcast?
We actually met in real life, and she told me that she knew Sarah from the show and like went to college with her and stuff like that.
Yes,
and she had said
so
she had a podcast and. You know, I noticed that you were funny as well. So I was like, yeah, I would love to like come
to the
podcast.
Do we have this on record? You just said that? Like, okay, I can die happy now, guys. It's up. We're good. Cut. That's the interview. But no, truly, you were so great. Meeting you was so great. We have Johnny here too, which is really the connection. And
you know what I'm saying?
He's a fucking awesome mad scientist type. Minus the science, but but you guys are so great, and I have to say, meeting you, it was great because I mean, no shade to like LA people, lived in LA for a while, but every once in a while, you know, you meet the kind of person who their head is really big, obviously, you know, like it goes to their head, and meeting you guys, you just couldn't have been more generous and lovely, and just like the best, most positive vibes.
Thank you. Yeah. Very much. Like, we try to put that out there.
Truly. No, like, so humble. People are coming up to you and you're just like, yeah, that means I'm doing my job well. I'm like, that is so
good
gracious.
Way to approach it.
Yeah, seriously.
Good way to approach it.
Yeah.
But we're so excited to have you here.
That's someone born and raised in the South. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
that's definitely a part of it. Mm-hmm. I have my manners.
I'm like, listen, as a North Carolina native,
you know what I'm saying?
Like, my dad's from Macon, Georgia.
Oh,
I'm like,
Macon bacon. I love it.
Exactly.
I love it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I try to keep my mother in mind. You know what I mean? Whenever, like, an anger moment is coming or an annoyed moment, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Or even if I'm just reading too far into. Like, a motherfucker could really be disrespecting me, you know what I'm saying? And it's just how you react to it, I guess. You know what I mean? It's what I've been trying to focus on lately, so.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, people, like, patting me on the back is concerned, like, you know, it's quite egregious to say that that's a nuisance, you know what I'm saying, in my opinion. Because there was those times when nobody gave a fuck.
Yeah. Like when you were
I'm in that time.
Yeah.
I'm like, let me say, I'm in that
between
time.
Between 4 and 4.5. It was just my parents.
There was this one month
my
I
parents
can recall.
And my brother.
No, but truly, I mean, it still speaks volumes to your character. And we're so happy you're here. But speaking of 4 and 4.5, you've been doing this forever, which is what really makes you such a legend in the industry. I mean, I grew up with Keenan and Kel, all that. Like, literally, this is crazy. I'm like, awesome. But so starting out, was it you that really pushed to get into entertainment and acting, or was it your family and those around you who just like saw this spark in you?
It was those around me. Like I liked TV and all that stuff, but it was more so to quote things with my brother, you know what I mean? Like on road trips, you know, we would do like Coming to America from beginning to end, driving our parents crazy. This is before a lot of electronics, you know, were in the game for kids, basically. So
yeah, you had to get creative. It was,
you know, just more so a love for the things that we enjoyed. And then, you know, the acting kind of started young, but it was up through the theater. So there was no glamour to it until like ages 15 with the Mighty Ducks and stuff. That's when it was like, you know, a real production type stuff, you know. But I'm glad I came up through the theater because I saw, you know, what real artist dedication looks like. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
When nobody's really watching or, you know, financially benefiting from it, and they're still in there, you know, as dedicated as if, you know, they were getting $100 million or whatever. So
yeah,
I'm glad I have that base to grow off of. And, you know, I definitely keep that shit in mind as well. We work so hard, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, we're out all the time or whatever nowadays because, you know, number one, we have goals, but at the same time, we're well aware of, you know, previous times. So
totally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Do you feel like there was a time that you kind of recognized the shift, if you were like, oh, I'll be doing this the rest of my life for sure? Or was it like that kind of from the beginning?
Yeah.
I mean, I had those hopes. Like, first commercial I did was for this fried chicken restaurant. And it paid me $800. I was like 11 or 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that's good. Honestly, I'm like, I would take
it. Well, like, yeah, $1 million to me, you know,
because
I didn't have a need to spend money at that age yet. Like, we weren't going anywhere. Like, I wasn't taking anybody to dinner. You know what I'm saying? So $800, I felt like would last the rest of my life. So I was like, well, if I could do that a couple more times, I'd be straight. You know what I'm saying?
$800 commercials.
That definitely was a light bulb moment because, like, I was aware that, you know, like the Eddie Murphys of the world were rich and, you know, like, because they're in Hollywood, but this is Atlanta, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't know if I would ever have access to that for real, for real.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, if I could get a couple of those $800, you know, stacked up, that's good living down there in the South.
Yeah. So you mentioned your brother. Do you have a big family? And, like, what's your family like? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, my parents, you know, like my mom's side for sure, like she's one of seven and my dad is like one of three, but both his parents, you know, had a lot of siblings and my mom's parents both had a lot of siblings. So I have like a lot of cousins and second cousins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In my immediate family, it's me and my brother and my sister.
Nice.
And my babies.
Oh, believe me, we have so many questions lined up for the girls.
For sure.
The two G's.
Yeah.
We love it.
Best.
So where did you fall in that lineup? I'm also curious, just based on your personality. Were you like the middle child?
I'm my father's middle child. My sister and I are 14 years apart.
Okay.
She's my half sister, but she's my whole heart. But yeah, she's it was me and my brother growing up together. Like, we're 4 years apart. And he's older, so I was the baby.
That makes sense too. Yeah, I could see either way.
Yeah. Do you feel like you ever missed out on like a normal childhood, quote unquote, or
no? Because I didn't start like working until I was like already 15-ish. And you're pretty much who you're going to be by that point, I think. You know what I mean? It's kind of time to like figure it out. Like, are you going to be an athlete? Are you going to be, you know what I mean, a writer? Are you going to be a lawyer? Like, you should start knowing those things around that time. Like, what you want to start pursuing, you know what I mean? Like, what your interests, like, really, really are, and how you're going to be able to, like, sustain a life. Like, yeah, by 15, 16, you should be thinking about that shit, I think. You know what I mean? It's only advantageous. Like, I feel like kids are on that shit at, like, 8 nowadays.
I know.
Especially
TikTok,
if they want to get like, into entertainment. They're just all over it, you know? Like, it's almost like any kid on a TV show is, like, they're almost, like, not smart if they don't drop an album, a book, or this and that, you know, like all these other things at the same time. So, and I think they're aware of that, which is way different from how it was when I was growing up, for sure.
Yeah.
Everything was super slow. You ever heard of an encyclopedia?
Oh my God. I kind of just like got a pang of missing that.
But like yellow pages.
Let's go through. Yeah, yellow page five.
It was a lot of them. Number one, it was, you know, a whole book for each letter. So imagine.
There's a lot of things up there.
So whatever word you're looking for, you got to go find that book. What does it start with? W? Go find the W book.
Hopefully let's go through the library.
Yeah. And people, you know, used to travel around and sell those things.
Yeah.
Whole libraries to people.
Yeah, people don't realize like encyclopedias and the yellow page. Like I vividly remember being like, we're ordering pizza. Hold on. And,
yeah.
Like,
open
yep, yep.
Flip. Yep. Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Oh my God, I love that reference. My parents literally would have on our fridge like a bunch of numbers, the important numbers, like yes. The main important two restaurants. Pizza. That's also growing up in New York City. It was like our three favorite restaurants, the doormen, our cousins.
If
like,
you didn't have a Pizza Hut magnet growing up. Your shit wasn't
You're too
real.
Young for us. Oh, that's awesome. But I do want to hear a little bit about the experience of being on Nickelodeon and kind of that whole transition, because obviously you were saying you started out in theater, which feel free to talk about too, because we know you were, weren't you Toto?
Yes, I was, proudly.
Hell yeah.
It was just like one of, you know, those things, like my first experience was like the gingerbread man in kindergarten, you know what I mean? And then
amazing.
Toto was like, we did the Wiz at church, you know what I'm saying? And like all the big kids got all the roles and then nobody like thought about even doing the dog. And I was like, well, I can do the dog maybe, you know what I mean? They were like,
that's entrepreneurial.
They were like, oh, that's kind of actually like Brent, you know what I mean? Because I don't know if they were going to use like one of the church members' dogs or some shit like that, but I was like, what if I was the dog and I could be funny? And I pulled that off in spectacular fashion. I remember there was this one like exit scene where everybody took off running down the back of the church or whatever. Yeah. And I was like on all fours and I couldn't keep up. So I was like, I just stood up and just like ran with them basically and like broke my character. That was my first break the fourth wall moment.
Which are some of the best ones. Yeah, seriously.
But there's a big theater scene in Atlanta. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's a lot of like Sam Jackson spent a lot of time on stage there. You know, people like that. Thomas Bird, who's in a lot of Spike Lee movies, rest in peace. You know, he's one of my mentors. So we took the like being an artist, you know, for the sake of being an artist very, very seriously, because we were taught by guys who spent their whole lives with, you know, industry people knowing who they were and hiring them for certain things, but not necessarily the world either subsidizing them financially or, you know, even emotionally or whatever, like, because, you know, they were kind of day playerish or whatever, but they were very memorable because they were good at what they did. So yeah, just coming up like that and, you know, up through high school, even like through the Nickelodeon days and stuff like that, like I was still like going to rehearsals and like performing sometimes, but it was starting to get busy. But those are still like my best friends kind of today. You know what I mean? Like we were in the trenches together, like piled up in whoever's got a car and, you know, getting dropped off by whoever can drop you off type shit. You know what I mean? Like spending every day, all day, because we like all went to high school together as well, and then we were in the like after school drama department like downtown with each other, because our drama teacher had this ensemble group that I like came up in before I went to high school. It's a long story, but before I went to high school, my brother and I through church discovered this youth ensemble organization or whatever, where they were like writing their own plays and stuff, and it was like another, you know, after school kind of programmy thing for kids to get into, like in the creative arts or whatever, that didn't really cost, you know what I'm saying? Like he wasn't charging us or charging families, you know. And it was like, oh, this is a guy that like does drama, and, you know, he has a reputation and blah blah blah, and there's this ensemble going and they're doing plays. And you know, the lead organist at our church knew that my brother and I played the keyboards as well, and I think they were looking for keyboard players, but they wanted to keep everything kind of like kid generated or whatever. So she brought us in. So, like, my first experience with them wasn't even on stage as an actor at all. I was playing the keyboards. And then I ended up going to, like, private school and fell out of touch with them for a while. And then my private school, after I started working, tried to make me choose between attendance and acting type shit. So I ended up going to public school, and he was teaching at the public school. And I was like, holy shit. And I reconnected with all those people. and like reconnected with my one buddy that was there from the beginning. He was like, you know, the ensemble, like golden child, because he was so talented and he was kind of with dude from day one, and they kind of built it together, even though he was like, you know, only 13 or something like that. He was just a ball of talent. So like my first day of school was miserable because drama class was the last period. It was like seventh period. And I'm coming from private school, so I didn't really know how to dress.
Were you too fancy?
Yeah. I was coming from, like, I just finished, like, Mighty Ducks. So I'd been in, like, California all summer. And it's way different from East Point, Georgia. You know what I mean? So I was just super awkward all day and quiet and just lost. Because I'd never, like, seen a broken up lunch period thing. So when the lunch bell rang, I went to lunch. And then...
You're like, why is lunch happening so much?
I went to my Spanish class and nobody was there. And I was like, well, that's weird. So I went back to lunch again and had another hangout session.
Went to like five.
The teachers are like, why are you skipping class? That like, next I don't think bell, I am.
Like, I went back to the Spanish class and they were there. I was like, cool. Like, what happened? Like, she was like, where were you? I was like, I don't know. I went to lunch. She was like, there's three lunches. There's A, B, and C lunch. You have B lunch. And I was like, I've never even heard of such a concept. So that was kind of like my first day. And then seventh period, I get to my drama class and walk into the theater. God bless the theater. It's such a temple. And the first person I see is my buddy. And I'm like, incredible. And then he introduces me to like my other like lifelong buddy at this point. And another lifelong. You know what I mean? And like we're just in the trenches immediately with each other. It was like the most comfortable. I finally felt like I was like really at home. You know what I mean? It was like a crazy moment. So yeah, I take the theater very, very seriously.
I love that. I mean, we're both trained with theater backgrounds and I think it's really good to have.
Been going up to a lot of Broadway shows with this guy right here. It's the best. Get yourself a Broadway friend, folks.
Literally.
Oh, that's like my old roommate. She's on tour with Mean Girls. And so I'm always like, so like, what tickets do you have?
You know what I'm saying?
When are we going on tour?
Yeah.
No,
thank you.
But Antonia, who's also, shout out Antonia, my amazing friend who I met these two through, she was saying that you guys go to Broadway shows all the time. I'm like, I'm inviting myself.
Here she is. Inviting herself.
Yeah, I love
those people are amazing, and they work so hard, and they're so talented, and like, you know, again, you know, careers that go, you know, kind of under the radar as far as publicity is concerned or fame is concerned. Like, I know they're, you know, industry recognized, and the Tonys know who they are, and the audiences too. Like, the audiences cheer for people that, you know, I'll go to the show and I won't necessarily know who they are, but they'll be screaming for them. So it's a very, you know, inner circle kind of thing. But I'm a big cheerleader, man. I just think that they're doing amazing, you know, amounts of work, you know, all the time. And I don't know if, you know, people really get that. Like, when you're just getting off a bus in Times Square and, like, you go have pizza after, you know what I mean? And
it's just like, you're just, like, walking around,
you
like,
hope to get an autograph, you know what I mean?
Have no idea you're bumping into people because you're tourists.
They're incredible. Incredible.
But, no, I mean, that's so true. And I would love to do, like, straight theater at some point. But even though I sing and I love singing, I've always... like from a younger age, but especially in college, realized that because of just the way my vocal cords are, I couldn't do it professionally. And the way I realized this was at Northwestern, I was in a production and I was the lead and I had to sing every day. And we only went on for 2 weeks, but it was every night. And I couldn't speak all day. I had to be on vocal rest all day or I'd lose my voice for part of the performance. And I was just like, it made me realize, I mean, different people, for people listening, have different vocal capacities, but it really made me understand that, like, this is so much work. Like, if I were to be on Broadway, it would be like this on crack. So I have so much respect for people who can do that.
It's good to learn that lesson before it's too late. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, the Kings of Leon guy suffers from that. You know what I mean? Like, he blows his voice out, you know, constantly. And, like, it got to a point where, like, in their documentary, you know, it was one of those kind of like blurred out moments when they were like kind of jawing at each other or whatever, but a frustrated moment with them, you know, had one of them say like, and your fucking bitch ass like voice gets hoarse every night type shit, you know, like, and you know that like hurts because that's something he's fighting probably every day, all day. It's embarrassing. Like, I remember
so bad.
My voice cracking throughout, you know, Keenan and Kel seasons and stuff like that, because I had, you know, like nodules on my like vocal cords or something like that. So I blow my voice out after SNLs too. So usually if I have to do something on Sundays, like a lot of the time I'm very hoarse.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's a lot of like, if I have a ton of shows or something in a row, especially if it's like an audience that needs a lot of energy and I'm like, let's scream through the show.
Yeah.
The next day I'm like, yep. And we're not talking because we're not able to.
So imagine 8 shows a week. Crazy.
Insane. Yeah. Guys, go to Broadway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
respect all the cast members.
Respect.
Yes.
1,000%.
But you brought up SNL, and so that was kind of a perfect segue for us. So thank you for that, making our jobs easier. but I do want to hear about SNL. You know, we are nerds, so we did our homework on you,
nice,
of course. And when I was looking, you know, through your Wikipedia page and stuff, it said that you were for a while auditioning and having some rejections because you were too young. What was the experience like? What was the point in time where you decided I'm going to audition for SNL, and when did they eventually accept you?
It was like right when we left Nickelodeon. I was like sending my tape, and they were just telling me that I like looked too young because I still have a baby face. Yeah. So that was, you know, kind of the only feedback. The other was, you know, positive. Like, we love you. We know, you know, we know who you are. You know, we're just, you know, kind of, it's not, it doesn't fit the look of the show, I guess, or whatever at that time, because up until that point, everyone on SNL besides like Eddie Murphy had been like a full adult, and they looked it.
I remember, you know what I mean?
Everybody looked like a full
100%.
Adult. Like young adults, maybe, but adults for sure.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily like, you know, prepubescent faces. So a couple of years of that, and then Tracy ended up leaving the show, you know, and like there was, you know, it was audition time. So it's kind of like a cattle call, and they let me in that cattle call. And I was like, well, this is my chance. It was, you know, a terrifying experience because I had to do stand up for the first time, but whatever, made it through. And it was like a 3-step audition process. Like, but I feel like my story is mild in comparison to, you know, people like Chris Parnell, who was on the show and then got fired and then got rehired, you know what I mean? And then, like, how do you emotionally deal with that? Or even like Melissa's trajectory, who like auditioned for the show like 10 years before she got it, type shit, you know what I mean? And I had a picture with Bobby Moynihan before he was on the show, like outside as like, you know, one of those people behind the barricades. Like, we have a picture together, like that. That's, and so like cute. To stay focused and like, you know, still pursue it and not, you know, let your ego get in the way or whatever, and actually get the job and do it well. And, you know, it's a very interesting thing. So yes, I was scared, but, you know, I've been, you know, beyond blessed, because as soon as I got the job, I moved to New York within like a day and a half, you know what I mean? And just left everything in LA. Like, this is it. Like, I'm going there at least, you know, for a year. So I don't know what else is, you know, the future will hold necessarily, especially in the first several years, because, you know, they option you every summer, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like a 7-year, like, mutual-ish kind of option where, you know, if everybody agrees, you can come back and work for us, type thing. But really, it's them. You know?
You're like mutual. Exactly. Big quotations.
Seriously.
How do you feel like it's evolved over your time there? Because, I mean, obviously being someone that's been there for so long, like, how do you feel like it's changed just within SNL and like the world too?
I mean, I think you can see it in, you know, and you can definitely hear it in the writing and the references and the subject matter and the settings. You know, it's not as many like dinners as it would be just like home settings and some sort of bit. You know, it used to be a lot of like, you know, old family gather around the dinner table and then we do a bit. Now it's a little more current, where it's just, you know, maybe a cocktail like living room, you know, kind of party, or like a corporate, you know, these people are from work, so let's behave ourselves, but we obviously don't, type thing. And, you know, it was definitely much more woke, I would say. And yeah, I think the writing team is just a lot younger, you know what I mean? Like, I think the oldest person on the team was a guy that, you know, I write with kind of the most, you know, and he was young when he started, type thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I guess since I've been there so long, I've kind of watched it go from a lot of like you know, gray-haired people to, you know, a lot of, like, young people.
That's actually so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Such a cool answer. Yeah, we also both have friends. I mean, growing up doing, she does comedy, I act and pretend to be funny, but, you know, Keenan's I'm funny, so officially funny. Haha, guys. But
official stamp.
But we know a lot of, like, people who kind of get into the writing side of things, and it's just... I really wish I could be like a fly on the wall just to like see that process. I feel like it would be so fun. But that's really awesome. And it's interesting what you were saying about like the way it's changed, really reflecting like the changes in the world and with technology.
Yeah.
And also, I just wanted to say, this is a random point and not really in our prepared questions, but you seem to really love like being a talk show host. Like, I feel like that's like one of your favorite things to do.
It is. Because it's the maestro, you know what I mean? And like, especially like Family Feud and like game shows, they usually have such a Black Jeopardy, forget about it.
We were watching Black Jeopardy last
There's night. A cadence to it, and it's not just, you know, what we're doing, it's, you know, the people in the room, it's the audience.
Yeah.
So everything is, you know, supposed to be going in a certain direction. So like a prime example is like, you know, Chadwick's episode of Black Jeopardy when he was playing, you know, T'Challa, his character from Black Panther. And all that week we were trying to like, you know, figure out how we were going to make it, you know, just as good or better than, you know, Tom Hanks, who just did it previously or whatever, which was, you know, it was an uphill battle because usually it's a fish out of water, you know, situation basically. But here we have a Black man on the Black Jeopardy show. You know what I mean? So how are we doing it? And then we started like leaning into like, you know, how Africans are different than African Americans, and like started mining some of that good gold. But you know, the big ramp up we hadn't figured out until kind of the last minute, or he wasn't, you know, comfortable with it or believing in it yet, you know, to deliver it in a way where everybody would give it the reaction that it deserved or whatever, until like, I want to say the live show. And that build up where it's like he's saying something and I'm like making my face like, yeah, we all kind of know where it's headed.
Yes.
And like if you can get three or four of those, like by the fifth time is like really time to celebrate for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So that felt great. You know what I mean? It's like I was able to just, you know, set him up to score, and that's like one of my favorite things to do, you know.
That's so awesome. I love how there's such a like science to it for you, like listening to you talk about it. And something that I've just come to appreciate over the years about comedians working with her, going to a lot of comedy nowadays because it's just so fun.
A lot of low budget comedy.
Starting out where we can, but is that it's just so intelligent in ways that I think, you know, we were talking about the random theater goer, but like the random comedy seller audience member wouldn't realize like how brilliant and like thorough it is, like the way it's prepared. So,
I think people are sleeping on how laser focused Sarah really is. She seems like she's just like black, like all over the place, but it is way more specific than you would possibly even probably imagine. Like a lot of, you know, especially in this generation where comedy and stand-up comedy has been around for so long now at this point. And, you know, the great ones that did it, you know, have like legacies from the 70s and 80s as opposed to like through the 90s. Like the 90s and 2000s are kind of skipped over for like our currents, basically. But for a person like Sarah, who's like coming in and trying to like top every female comic that was, you know, standout-ish or whatever and trying to be different, it's a lot of thinking, you know what I mean? So you'll see that on her like after the show or during rehearsal, like she's like very quiet and like, you know, like reserved, you know what I mean? And then she fucking explodes with either an idea or a performance or whatever. And if you watch her Instagram, she's like always on tour type shit and like doing shows.
Yeah. So impressive.
And like the way she promotes it is just what makes her happy. But it seems like chaos, but it is very
calculated.
Very calculated. Yeah.
So for people listening, I mean, I'm sure by this point most people know, but Sarah Sherman, she's like one of the new cast members. She went to Northwestern with me and she's so brilliant, and you really hit the nail on the head. She also is what's cool about watching her on SNL is she's changing it up in a way we haven't mm-hmm. seen before. Like, she has an element of like gross and absurd to mm-hmm. it that's like a little yeah. off brand, but like perfectly fits, but at amazing. The same time. Mm-hmm. So she is always the one who does the bits with Colin where she's like predator of the West Village. Or like, you know, like it's so, yeah. so funny. And I feel like she definitely, like, I can see the ways in which she's contributing to it so much.
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to watch how the audience takes in new information and new styles. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because yeah. some things she does, they're just like, you know, trying to figure out if they're willing to accept such, you know, whether it's, you know, crash or like visually kind of crazy or whatever yeah. from a newer person, you know what I mean? But yeah. then when she does straightforward things like, you know, Weekend Update or whatever, and it's kind of, you know, a Mad Magazine like picture thing playing with Colin,
yeah,
they eat that up. They're like, oh, I get that. I know exactly what yeah, that is. Yeah, and yeah. it's, you know, a freight train, like, you know, joke after joke after joke, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's no time to like settle. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Just all bullet points. And then, you know, when she stretches it into a crazier kind of character, it's interesting to see what people, like, you know, check in or check out on. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. even though they know they like her, it's like, you know, it's almost like they want to help her, like, formulate her taste yeah. with non-reactions. And it's like, that's that's where the emotion of it all comes into, where people talk about that job is very emotional, because you'll be celebrated amongst, you know, a group of comedic minds, and then you'll put it up in front of a group of Applebee's goers and yeah. they'll let that shit fall on his face, and you have to figure out where the disconnect is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Find like the middle ground kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting too, because, you know, Nina was asking about the longevity of your career and being on for so long. And I think, you know, it is something where I could see how people watching now, she has some, like you're saying, like crass stuff or visuals that are like, whoa, mm-hmm. How people watching it now could be receiving it. Like, do we like this? Do we not? Mm-hmm. But I feel like it'll be so interesting to look back in like 10 years and see if things are just changing in that direction, or if there's more of that, you know,
it's happened to everybody. Yeah. Tracy Morgan, my brother for life, mm-hmm. like, he's, you know, the one kind of first big brother in the game I ever like really had. Like, he
yeah.
took me under his wing for real. He was like, I'm gonna just like continuously give you game every time I see you. And I, like,
awesome.
I eat it up. Like, he talked my ear into like 7 a.m. many a time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wasn't even on the show, you know what I mean? He was just around.
<He'd retired.
laughs> Yeah, and he was coming to after parties, and, you know, he would just show up, and then, you know, we would sit on, you know, the back of some, you know, couch, like in the club or whatever, always, and just mm-hmm. like, he would just be in my ear saying hilarious but also brilliant shit, but mostly hilarious shit. Like, he's incredible. But one of his pieces of game was like, recognize where you are and tap into the archives of this place, you know what I mean? Like, you have access to the dress rehearsals of a 47 year show.
Yeah,
it was like 30 at the time. But he was like, go watch the dress rehearsals and you'll see Eddie Murphy bomb. You'll see, you know what I mean, all these people before the audience knew who they were. And it was kind of all about the words and how the audience was willing or not to receive the words, mm-hmm. and watch him struggle to gain approval from the audience. This is Eddie Murphy on Weekend Update, yeah. which is just like straightforward jokes, you know what I mean? Yeah. But people are still like, you know, watching this guy, like, is he, you know, they're in their heads when you're new, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And when they trust you, like a lot of people say, it's like, man, as soon as you pop on the screen, I'm ready to start laughing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, in the yeah. beginning, it's never like that, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, you have to earn that trust from people. So yeah, I take that place very seriously, man. It's not a game, and that room is special, but it's special because it's one of the bigger, like, human connectors I've ever been a part of, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's helped people through so many tough times. Like, don't forget about 9/11, but I'm just saying, like, 9/11 had to be so crazy, gnarly, you know what I mean? And SNL was there. Mm-hmm. And then, like, through COVID, SNL has been there. And, like, you know, I think SNL will continue to be there, even if it's just reruns. But it's one of those things where everything is real about it. It's live. So what we're doing is the real version of what we can do, and the reaction to it is the real reaction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's yeah. so healing in that way. And yeah. honestly,
heal the world.
Honestly, just hearing you speak about it is so beautiful. And like, it kind of adds up hearing you talk about it. Like, I know Lauren was quoted saying that basically, like, if he put you in a sketch to punch it up, like, he'd immediately get laughs. Like, he just knew, because the audience had that trust for you that you're talking about, you know?
Yeah, up until a point. And then, you know, there comes another point when, you know, the audience has seen a lot of your moves. You know what I mean? You gotta like try to like pull out some new stuff, which is hard to do. Yeah. It's hard to, you know, keep Ray Charles in it, you know, it's hard to keep writing hits, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You gotta, like, there's no crutches. Like, mm-hmm. if anybody has been able to experience it, like, I've been able to lean on not necessarily being funny on Wednesday, but still giving a shot on Saturday to figure, like, if we can figure it out by then type stuff. But it doesn't feel good not to get laughs in a room full of comedic minds, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, because they're very aware of what you do, and like, they may have heard that before. It's just not impressing them, like, whatever. It's like, shit, now I'm back in the, you know, trenches of figuring out where a disconnect is when I thought I kind of knew what I was doing type shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a cast member that you feel like you just have like great energy with anytime you're on?
Yeah. I mean, mostly all of them, you know what I mean? Yeah. I've never necessarily been awkward with anybody, you know, like, I give people their space to do what they want to do. And, you know, you offer, you know, an opportunity, or, you know, and you offer, you know, a favor from somebody to be in your sketch and shit like that. And if they tank it or not, we'll tell you whether or not you need to keep putting them in your shit or not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's pretty simple, but, you know, it's mostly like a very family kind of environment. So everybody's just like trying to do what they can do, because it's usually not about the personal, will you put me in my sketches or not? It's the echo effect of, like, do other people think they can depend on me in their mm-hmm. shit type shit? And that's the bigger, you know, hill to climb, basically. So you never want to just tank anybody's anything, whether it's a one-line thing or something that you got to, like, go, you know, to one of the studios outside the studio and back and forth on a Friday type pre-tape day thing for one line. You know what I mean? It's like, you can't focus on the nuisance of it too much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're still trying to like earn your strizipes or whatever, you know? For me, like, trying to be like, you know, a parent, like, I have to like be like, yo, I can't just do all three of these pre-tapes. Like, at some point I have to like sleep and like get up or whatever type stuff, or get home or any of that. So that's been my only, you know, times where I have to like raise my hand and be like, I have a scheduling thing. Before that, I was just like, you know, call me for anything. Like, we're always up and, you know, sleep on Sunday type mentality, yeah. basically. That's why I'm recently getting into Broadway, because it was like that for so long. You know what I mean? We would just take Sunday to sleep and get right back at it on Monday.
That's wild. Yeah. It's interesting you brought that up. I kind of want to ask two questions. Mm-hmm. I'm like, which one should I do?
Both.
Okay, both. Okay, then I'm going to start with one, and then I want to ask you more about being a dad, because yeah. I know you love it. You can see it in your face. But,
girl dad. We love a girl dad.
But I guess to close out the SNL conversation, is there a certain, I'm sure there are so many, but like memory or a person who hosted where you just had like an amazing time? I'm sure it's hard to know because there are probably like 8,000 moments, but.
There are. I mean, still my two favorites are like Dave and Tom Hanks. Like,
yeah.
Chadwick was incredible, but it's such a like hole in our hearts, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
it's sad.
But it was probably one of my greatest weeks, because for some reason I wanted to be Panthro, and they built me a full Panthro costume, and I had that picture, you know what I'm saying? Because it was so ridiculous, it made it into the show, because they didn't have anything else that was like as crazy, you know what I mean? And it was kind of on point. Like, I was the original Black Panther, Panthro. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a little bit of a like tie into it. For me, that's all I needed. I was like, Panthro. Everybody knows that, right?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. So you really had to be watching like the Thundercats in the 80s to get any of that. They let it roll. And the internet had fun with it. It's one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen, you know. But you know, I feel bad for Dave because he's, you know, constantly going through it now, you know, like it feels like more of an attack than it does, you know, a conversation of education or healing or anything, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels more so like, let's just continue to try to like take this man down for speaking his mind, which is a comic's kind of responsibility, you know what I mean? Like, if you offend, you should be able to apologize and move on. But this whole trying to like seemingly sabotage someone's like way of how they make a living or whatever is, it's a little like invasive as far as, you know, these American freedoms we're supposed to be having as far as freedom of speech is concerned, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Especially for comedians, because it's like, those are the people that can say what they want to say, you know?
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm still, you know, on the advocate side of being an educated comic and not just going out there spouting out rhetoric that, you know, will just burn people regardless. But I think there is a humorous approach to any subject, you know what I mean? It's just all about, you know, how intelligent do you do it? And, you know, if you're being insensitive towards things or whatever that has certain detriments, like I feel like there's detriments in those communities for being misunderstood as far as like they might get killed or they might, you know what I mean, run into like, you know, a lot of violence or whatever just based on, you know, how they're living. That part of it, you know, a little bit of that responsibility is going to fall back on the comedian making jokes about it in a way that's not, you know, a smart way to like show people who don't know what the world is about without, you know, still making it seem like they might be ridiculous or this, that, and the other or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that would make people laugh at things. Like, you can still laugh at things without dehumanizing it, I guess. And right now, that bridge isn't connecting between him and that community, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because he's saying that he's not transphobic or whatever, and they're just saying that you are because you continue to tell these jokes. And he's like, well, it's my job. And they're like, well, you know, fuck that. And it's just this like tug of war, which is it's rough because he is one of our greatest thinkers, you know what I mean? And like brilliant comic, like, you know, on the Mount Rushmore, like I would say he's up there, you know.
I love that. Yeah, every comic I've ever met or interviewed has pretty much without fail named him as just like the great, if you know, one of, if not the. And I totally agree with what you're saying and think it's like speaks to a bigger problem just in our society in general right now, where it's like what he's trying to do, as you were saying, is kind of bridge that gap and find that like sweet spot where we can laugh at it, but it's still not hurting that community, is basically kind of what you're talking about. But yeah, I feel like a lot of people nowadays are unwilling to have conversations.
Or it's just like back up off of a community that's in danger. You know what I mean? Like if motherfuckers is getting attacked and they're Asian, maybe don't tell a bunch of Asian being attacked jokes or something like that.
Yeah.
Just like talk about everything else. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, he's being like so personally attacked about it.
Absolutely.
You know, he wants, you know, his freedoms to like speak back. You know what I mean? And also, like, we don't get the full truth through the media or what we read in our, you know what I mean? Like, so he's a big advocate of like, no, let me tell you what really happened, like straight up. And that just continues, I think, to leave kind of, you know, wood chips in the fire that re-spark the fire type shit. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see what comes of it, because in the first special, like, he was talking about one of his transgender friends who passed away and like the friendship that they had and like the conversation they had once when he made her feel bad about something that he wasn't aware she would take that way or whatever. And it was a beautiful reconciliation of, you know, a person learning, you know, where a misstep may have happened and the other person learning where they may have, you know, maybe took what was said in a way that wasn't meant, you know what I mean? So there was some learning and growth there. Right now we're not seeing in much of that, I don't think.
I was gonna say, when I watched the special, I was like, this, I mean, that part of the special like brought a tear to my eye.
1,000,000%.
Which I I'm like, what? This isn't in the, you know, like this isn't what people.
I also know the man, you know what I mean? And I don't know him to be malicious like that about anything. You know what I mean? Like,
you know,
you watch his show, he was just, you know, on everything that was like semi funny, but mostly about like his main thing, which I think this back and forth is coming from, you know, he's just, you know, black power driven, you know what I'm saying? So the oppression of the culture being outshined by these things is, you know, something that he has a real hard time not discussing. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So for sake of time, but I loved that. I think that was the most eloquently I've ever heard anyone speak on the subject. So
oh man, truly, it's, yeah. I'm highly intrigued by him, the individual, and like, yeah. I've always had him like on my radar since he, you know, departed his show, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like before that, he had worked so hard and he was notorious for having like pilots that didn't go anywhere, but he was always getting signed every pilot season or whatever, because everybody knew how funny and different he was. But that connector just wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
And his freedom to really, like, his butterfly moment hadn't happened yet. He was still kind of in his caterpillar phrase, you know, phase, if that makes any sense, because you watch his old stand up and the jokes are there, but his swag isn't in confidence, you know what I mean? And I think Killing Them Softly was like the first bang where it was like, oh, this dude is solid in who he is and what he wants to say and how he says it is really funny.
Yep.
And then the show came and then it was just like, oh yeah, this is who he is. And it's finally the carved out, you know, version of himself, like to a T or whatever. So when he walked away from that, me being in the industry as well and kind of like being like, fuck that, I would never walk away from $50 million. Like, that shit ain't, you know what I'm saying? Like, hire some help, like whatever it is that's giving you a headache, like hire some people to like distance you from that or whatever. But years of saying that and he hadn't come back yet, you know, it was like when he did return and to like listen to the man, it was like, wow, shit is real out there. And there's no amount of money that's going to bring you like peace of mind. So you can't really put a price on that. Yeah. And during that time period, I was watching every kind of semi interview he would do and semi talk about it. Like I watched the Oprah thing. I watched him on, you know, Inside the Actor Studio and like all these things, and he never really like would get to the real why. He was always kind of, you know, talking around it or whatever, and just talking about him being like semi uncomfortable with how his material was being received. But then I finally got to the last, you know, whatever, it might have just been him talking on one of his stand-ups, and he was like, what happened was I saw someone in the corner laughing evilly or more evilly intentioned than what we were doing, and we were doing like racially, you know, crossing lines kinds of things. But the way this guy was laughing at it was like, you know, I told you so that they were like that type thing, and like fully taking it the wrong way. And he kind of panicked about the responsibility of things being out of his control like that. You can't really take, if someone's going to interpret shit wrong, you can't do anything about that. Yeah, you know what I mean? And so it, I think it freaked him out. So he bounced. Yeah. And he would much rather just speak his mind on stage very clearly. That's why I think this back and forth is continuing to go on.
Yeah. That's honestly so insightful to all of
it's
it.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really like, yeah, I really could is. Talk to you about that for hours alone.
We'll get him on next.
Yeah.
Part two.
We'll get both of you. Yeah. Literally. The
round table discussion.
Yeah, the round table. Literally, the
what the fuck's up?
Round table. Yeah, what the fuck's up? Mm-hmm. Table talk. TED talk. Featuring Caitlin, Nina, and Kenan, and Dave Chappelle. but I do want to close out this kind of part of the interview with talking about one of your favorite newer roles, which is being a father. When we met, you were just so excited to tell me about them. You have two little girls. They're so cute from what I've seen.
They're the sweetest.
But yeah, do you want to just kind of talk about your journey so far being a dad and how it's changed you, what you love about it, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, most parents say it's the best thing they've ever done. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like you don't really realize all the things it can, you know, mature you in so many different directions, you know what I mean? Like in all the different ways, like, but it was my first kind of holy shit, it's not about me moment for real, for real. You know what I mean? Like getting married and like being in relationships, like, yeah, you're still kind of like, you know, you're adults, you know what I mean? The other person can usually take care of themselves throughout the day. You know what I mean? Like I've never had to be like 24 hours responsible for another person and you know, it coming naturally. It was just like one day I was not a dad and the next day I was. And from that day on, I've been since, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it's just, you know, an all consuming kind of a feeling. And they are little miracles, man. It's, you're like witnessing, you know, God's, you know, work on this, you know, supreme wing, whatever you want to call it. But like the miracle of life, to like really watch that and like watch how people grow and mature and like little milestones and all that shit. It's very cool. And I didn't have that perspective before. Like, I'd been around kids, you know what I mean? But like, my brother didn't have kids before I did, and my sister didn't either, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Thank God, because she was a little baby. but yes, they're just sweetest, man. And getting reintroduced to them, to that magic. Like, mm-hmm. I remember like my world being shattered the day I found out that there was no, well, not to spoil it for anybody listening, but you know, the guy in the red hat, let's just say. The day I discovered the falsities of that one. So make of that what you will.
Were they so upset?
But I just, no, I don't know. They still believe.
They still like, believe. Oh,
I'm talking
God.
About me. I remember the actual day. You know what I'm saying? And like the moment, you know, because it was just like such a like break screech kind of moment.
Was it
like,
was.
I'm sorry, what?
Like, yeah, what that's a core about? Memory.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Fully in the afternoon, so it's nice to witness that you know, believing in magic and you know that innocence. Yeah. It's so good, so yeah. sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. And being a girl dad in specific, you know, yeah. like
the sweetest.
Girls are pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys are like pretty cool.
pretty cool.
But yeah, it's, you know, they're emotional. There's a lot of crying.
Adds up.
But it is true. What it is. Like, to even watch them grow out of not crying for everything kind of thing, you know what I mean? And like mm-hmm. crying when they really mean it. Like, it's just, it's amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so awesome.
Do they realize like how iconic you are? Do they think you're funny?
Yeah. Do they think you're funny?
They think they're much funnier than I am.
They not, probably are.
They're no. not wrong. You know, they are very, they crack me up. Like, my little one is, she's wild. Like, Gianna is, she's very funny. Georgia is like, you know, the maestro as well. Like, she's all about like being front and center on stage and stuff like that. Yeah. And she's a ham, so she's really funny. And but Gianna's just like a little devil child, you know, second kids. Like, they're just, you know, reckless and fearless and stuff like that. So they're very funny. She likes to laugh, you know, she likes to hear herself laughing. I think she likes to, she likes the idea of her laughing, you know, yeah. so that'll make her laugh.
Yeah, how
she's
old is
very
she?
Funny. She's turning 4 in like a week.
Oh, that's a great age.
And
gosh.
Georgia's 8 already. Wow. Crazy. It's crazy, so crazy.
That's crazy. Do you
but
feel
do they recognize? Yeah. I think they recognize me when I'm on TV, but I don't know if they connect what it may mean or anything. Yeah. They just think that that's my job, and I do that, basically.
Yeah. Just like my dad went to a bank, you know. Okay. Same, but different.
Yeah. Do you feel like, when like especially when with your first kid, how have you been able to manage like work-life balance?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just good family unit, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody, like the village, you know, really came together and like, you know, was very helpful. Like, we had both of our kids in Tampa just because we thought, you know, first time around it was kind of crazy to have stressful to have a kid in New York. Yeah. And they were both summer babies, so I had time off of SNL and we could do it like that. So that's what we did. And it was great, you know, like the first 2 or 3 months of your first child and it being quiet and, you know, a lot of like sunrises where, you know, she'd be like cranky-ish and I could just like take her outside on the little balcony or whatever and she would just calm down, you know, just like
so nice.
Listening to outside and like the quiet and just being intrigued by that or the changing in temperature or whatever, like just attention needed to be given to a child at that mm-hmm. time type stuff. And yeah. having the time to do that was, you know, it was very valuable.
That's so wonderful. Yeah. Well, congrats. I mean, I know they're like, you know, 4 and 8, but still, that's yeah. awesome.
Yeah.
It's really
I'm
cute.
I'm looking forward to like watching what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm like, I'm keeping an eye on them now. Okay. And then we want to end off the interview with a game we do. It's rapid fire. It's right. called 7T questions. It's not 7-0. It's T-E-A. Like, what's the T?
Uh-huh. Spill the tea.
So yeah, we're spilling the tea. That's mm-hmm. exactly what it is.
All right.
So that being said, the first question is, what is the current tea in your life?
the tea in my life is artist for artist. You see the guru sitting right there, man.
Yes. And you guys are starting, oh my God, I totally forgot the My Therapist Says show, right? That's
one of,
tea.
Yeah, one of many. Like my, we have the rights to turn My Therapist Says into the awesome TV show it's about to be. Just because it's, you know, great creative people behind it. You know what I mean? And I think they're going to, you know, create something awesome because they already have. You know what I mean? Like several times over, like. You know, their Insta channel or whatever, but like sold out the book and like, you know, they're smart young ladies and very, very funny. And I think they're going to do very well. That we're going to surround them with the team that they need. And that's what Artists for Artists is about, baby.
I love it. Yeah. It's so cool that you guys, you're also moving into this role of like producer, developer, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about it enough and stay focused on it enough. It's weird how things will eventually unfold that way, even if you're trying to like claw at it in another way. You know what I mean? Like we just announced in December and like we made a lot of progress in 7 months.
Yeah, I was looking at all the different like articles about it. There's just like one after another, like bam, bam, bam.
That's a fast timeline.
Go, Johnny. Yeah.
Tip
Johnny's
of the iceberg.
Just sitting here like
whoop. Tip of the iceberg. You know? But you know, it's the mothership, you know. Like it's given us the ability to do a whole lot of other things, basically. So just keep your ears out, man. This guy right here developed the Mic Bites. You're welcome.
Yes, which I want to try one. This is their edible company.
Brilliant idea. Yeah, I was telling you from that. A brilliant mind over there.
It's I just love it.
So on point. But it comes from being a fan of, you know, artists and arts and athletes and stuff like that, but just a fan of like entertainment first.
I thought you were gonna say weed.
And if, you know, you gotta be a fan of weed.
The bites come.
Those
from.
Are the ones that make it good and, you know, coconut or whatever. But the idea, you know what I mean? Like just being a fan of, you know, the zeitgeist basically, and knowing that that moment happened and who you're dealing with, and like, you know, Mike had, you know, a weed company and this, that, and the other, and like Johnny, you know, got involved in it and. You know, switched it all up and made it Tyson 2.0 what it is now and stuff like that. But while doing that, just sitting around with Mike and being like, you know what, you should do like edibles. Like what kind? You should do ears with a piece missing.
Yeah, I'm
crazy.
Sad.
You know what I mean? Like it has so to be fun. A cool environment to like casually come up with something like that would fit, you know, that guy so well. And that, you know, it's sold out in 30 states and like, that's money for him and his family, you know what I mean? Based off of an idea off of, you know, a horrible thing that happened in the ring. But in his defense, Holyfield was headbutting him.
What's he going to do?
And there it is. Pretty good defense.
Literal defense. Okay. Do you want to? Oh. Yeah.
Do you want to? Okay. Second question. Can you do one of your favorite impersonations for us, or at least tell us one of them?
Yeah, if you don't want to do it, we won't make you.
No, I mean, I like them all. Like, my thing about impressions is tonal. You know what I mean? Like, the people that I do well usually sound a specific way. So, like, Charles Barkley sounds like how he sounds. And, like, you know, Steve Harvey sounds like how he sounds. And, you know, everybody I like, Sharpton, Kendrick Perkins. We would do a lot of Kendrick Perkins lately. Al Roker doesn't necessarily sound like that. He just sounds that way to me. Like in my head, he's talking to me that way.
I think I hear you instead of him now. At this point, like it's gotten there.
It's,
you know?
It's that smile, and it's so joyous. You know, I just feel like that's how he talks. He's just a big ball of fun, telling you what's going on in your neck of the woods. So yeah, it's something to do with, you know, sound mostly. And then everybody else that I don't have a like sound impression of is, you know, my takeaway from them usually. Yeah.
You're also great with physical comedy, obviously. Yeah. So
we have
hence
to.
Toto.
Yeah.
that was
Toto,
the origin.
Started it all.
Yeah.
It all started.
It's all kind of part of it. I mean, like Martin Short was, you know, he went to mime school, you know what I mean? Like and he's brilliant at it. Like that's why when he, you know, they put a fan on him, it looks like he's being blown away. Like he can act that out so very well because he's, you know, trained. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and literally trained.
I think physical humor, you know, there's training to be had there for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always joke at Northwestern, like literally we'd So we had this, she actually did physics, but we had this thing that was like random physics.
And now I'm a comedian.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. No, I did not do science. But we had this thing where it was like the like tech people would come in for like their theater class. It was like engineers who like did theater, mm-hmm. and they'd be watching us. And this is our major. And like the thing we're doing, this is our very serious class. And we're like crawling on the ground and like, and they're like definitely like, what the fuck are they on? And we're like, life, theater.
No, it's having about the committing.
Yeah,
yeah. It's really learning how to commit to like what would seem dumb or what would seem whatever. It's the actor's job to make that shit real. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And say what you want, Tom Cruise is committed. You know what I'm saying? Like, true. Keanu is committed, and they might not be the best, you know, expressors. Like Keanu kind of like is the same guy, I guess, in every line reading, but his commitment to performance or showing up and actually doing the work or whatever is there, and that's what you take from that. You know what I mean? Like Tom Cruise, same kind of thing. You know, like who was it that was shitting on him for playing? Oh, Mickey Rourke was like shitting on Tom Cruise for being the same guy for 30 years. But you know, who's going to give us Top Gun? You know what I mean? Who's going to give us Jack Reacher? It's not Mickey Rourke.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so you try it, Mickey.
It's just like, you know, embrace people for what they're doing. Like, and I appreciate it. These are gifts. Like, Maverick is a gift. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So, I don't know. It's tough, you know, with like everything, I guess, we're learning about Scientology and whatnot. But at the same time, I don't know, if Tom didn't physically personally put hands, you know what I mean? I don't know.
He didn't create it.
What am I supposed to do?
He's not the founder, you know?
And like, he's obviously a guy that wants to belong to something, so I can't, you know, I can't look down upon him for being involved in that. And, you know, he's so entrenched in it, you know, I can't blame him for not necessarily overly speaking out against it either, you know what I mean? Like, because he is, you know, pretty synonymous with it, and they're synonymous with, you know, his life. Like, they provided his lifestyle of about a lot of things, you know what I mean? Like hangers and planes and motorcycles and this, that, and the other. And like, from what I understand, from what I've been hearing or documentary wise, like how he lives, you know what I mean? Like all his toys and like his way of life, and it's all very taken care of through the church. So that's kind of like, can you separate the artist from the man type thing or whatever? But at the same time, if you're just talking about commitment, you got to give him his credit.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. Other than Tom Cruise, what is the smallest hill you're, I guess that's a big one. What is the smallest hill you're willing to die on?
The smallest hill?
Yeah. So like just something really like petty ridiculous.
I think it's like subway hikes, like MTA, like the cost of the MTA going up. But I know that's tied into like people's wages, so maybe that's not cool. But I feel like the city has plenty of money and they should be able to figure out how to like allow people who have it in a way where they need to take the subway. Like, I know it's a convenience, but for a lot of people it's not necessarily just the convenience, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's so a necessity.
Just like, if you want New York to be the greatest city, make it the greatest city and make all those things just available for people. Like, what would it really cost?
Totally.
They just started cleaning that shit during COVID, so
you know. Literally.
And I'm like, what happened? Because it's still
figure it out.
I still saw someone shit between two cars yesterday. That was really
fun. What I mean. Like, there's a lot going on with that, but that's a mental health thing. You know what I mean? But that's a big hill.
That's a huge hill. I know. That's another podcast. That's part two.
Yeah,
we're bringing you back for that.
Dave can also chime in on that.
If he's you know, free.
If he's available.
Oh God, this is
okay. Yeah. So
wait, no, you should do this one.
Okay. Yeah. Then you can do. All right. So this one is fuck, marry, kill the Atlanta Hawks, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Atlanta Braves.
We also have bets on this. No big deal. I don't know about sports.
My dad raised me on Atlanta sports.
You mean
so
like the mascots?
He's like, I'm about to lose some good tickets if I answer this.
No, we're married to the Falcons for sure. Like the Falcons can kind of do no wrong in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta's a loyal ass team. The Braves as well, I think. But football just seems like it's just bigger, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and definitely fuck with the Braves. So I guess I would have to kill the Hawks, unfortunately. But they're doing so well right now. I don't want to kill those guys. Maybe if I try to and they get mad and do better, that would be the
yeah, that would be a good incentive.
Just attempted. Just attempted.
Incentive for
that
them.
Was a tough one though. But you know, the Hawks are, if you're from Atlanta, you they're all on the same kind of pedestal. Like you root for them all kind of equally.
That's why I was like, we gotta put this question.
You're like, this is a contentious one.
This is what I was raised on, like Atlanta like sports teams, just because that's how, and I'm like a huge Georgia fan for college sports, so I was like, we gotta include it.
Football is big in the South.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, literally like Nina keeps asking if we can bring someone on who plays sports. I'm like, sure, I'll I'm be like quiet. Huge,
you guys said I met Cam Hayward, and he's like a Pittsburgh Steelers, like, oh, is he like an offensive or defensive lineman? He's ginormous. Yeah. You should bring him in here because that would be
we're just going to keep trying to get bigger and bigger, bigger people men on the table.
It would be hilarious.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I'll hit him up if you want.
Yeah, no, please. Listen, please.
We won't say no.
He's so nice.
One thing, as the firstborn, another my dad was dad, like, you're going to know sports.
Another girl dad.
This is what I'm going to do for
I
you.
I love girl dads.
I think so.
My dad's a girl dad.
A girl.
Obviously. I'm all he's got, sadly. I asked for siblings. It's not my fault. Guys, everyone's always like, you're an only child. I'm like, I didn't choose this life.
You weren't like, no more.
I requested and was told no. Okay, the next question is, what is the weirdest thing about being famous that like someone wouldn't think about?
I mean, I don't, I guess the weirdest thing is the fact that it happens, you know what I mean? The fact that like, people recognize you, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like outside of like your hometown, you know, like you grow up knowing, you know, or being known for what you do well type thing. Like if you're that quarterback or you're, you know, did something crazy on the playground or if you're a knucklehead or whatever. But to just like walk out your door and like strike somebody just because you make eye contact with them, that's weird. You know, it's it's so immediate, especially when the, you know, a person is like really a fan or like really aware of you. You know what I mean? Like there's no way to just, you know, ignore it. So there's a lot of like hat wearing or non-eye contact that a lot of people with fame end up doing. You know, like I remember being around Snoop and inside of his like house turned into a studio type thing, and it's, you know, I would say a most trusted setting kind of thing, because it's his house, it's his studio, it's his security, it's this, that, and the other. It's tucked away in wherever the fuck, California, whatever, you know, and like this is his surroundings, and still, like, he's not a big eye contact kind of dude. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he's, like, just walking around, and it's just, like, in his own kind of world, because that shit is, you know, eye contact is piercing.
It's intimate.
Yeah.
We actually recently had this girl on who was part of Love on the Spectrum, and she was talking about it and how eye contact just felt, like, way too intimate and personal for her. And I was like, I, you know, as far as I know, I'm not on the spectrum, but I was like, I can relate to that. 100%. And I could imagine how once you're famous, it really brings it to the next level where it's like, not only that, but you're kind of taking in the energy of that.
I was just about to say
stuff,
that,
you know,
you're taking in energies and intentions and you have to like deal with other shit before you have the chance to choose. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
And like, it can be burdensome, you know, especially if it's like negative in any sort of way, you know what I'm saying? Like whether it's stemming from, you know, my mood or motherfuckers trying to be funny or whatever it is, or, you know, I don't necessarily love to be like loud talked, so like people love to shout down the street type shit. I don't really respond well to that most of the time. I just, you know, chuck deuces and keep it moving, and that's like the best of it, you know what I'm saying, a lot of the time. But it's mostly like love, you know what I'm saying? So I try not to let those kinds of things like just creep into my mind. Like, oh, I can't. How dare they talk my name like so loud in this restaurant? Like, they have no class. You know? And, but at the same time, it's like, you know, whatever, man. Like, I won't be the bad guy here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll fucking take the picture and blah blah blah, and you know, make it happen. And their friends will tell them that that was inappropriate later or something. Whatever.
Yeah, they'll learn through time. Hopefully.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true. Okay, the next question is, what is your favorite guilty pleasure? Any category?
Like food was always one of them, you know what I mean? Like indulging and not necessarily being as balanced as I would love to be. Same. But yeah, between that and like just being in front of the TV for hours upon hours and combing through it and studying it. You know, it's kind of like my classroom a little bit, like knowing what people are into and just like whether I believe that or not type mm-hmm. shit. You know what I'm saying? And if I can see if there's an agenda behind this thing or if it's really valid yeah. type stuff, and know what's worthy of being celebrated too at the same time. So
that's so cool though. That's such a like not guilty, guilty pleasure. It's, oh, yeah. It's like your textbook. Yeah. Your encyclopedia, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm bringing it all the way back. And then for the last question, we always ask this, not just to you, but what is something that people otherwise wouldn't know about you?
I mean, I think people are kind of shocked when they meet me in person and I'm very quiet. You know what I mean? I'm very mellow. I think you can see that if you listen to the podcast. Like my buddy is like on 10 all the time and I'm always just like very chilling. So that's usually shocking. And, you know, in the beginning, people used to take that the wrong way too, because I wouldn't give them the energy that they were giving to me or were expecting from me. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is people's once maybe in a lifetime chance to be around me, and like, let's not ruin the moment just because I want to be my, you know, myself in this moment, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Yeah. Like, at some point there's, you know, the compromise of it all. The compromise for me is go see my shit when I put it out. The compromise for them is I should be nice to them when I see them.
But it makes sense. It's like, we're just talking about energy, but it's draining to be on like that all the time. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah, it'll never be like, you know, let me just hop up and start telling jokes type thing. Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily have to be like the very flat, you know, kind of like, hey, what's up? Like the hood version. Like a lot of people aren't ready for that, you know, coming from me necessarily, but that's very much how I grew up. Yeah. So, you just have to learn how to like quickly navigate how you want this to go. Yeah. And if it's in my control, I can choose. So why wouldn't I choose towards, you know, a better reaction? That's kind of how I think about it.
Well, this has been my favorite interview to date. I think it's easy to say.
We can both say that.
Yeah, I think we can. We should get one of those. You guys have them in your podcast. We'll try to find the effect. But thank you so much for coming on today, Keenan. This has been amazing. I can't tell you. I feel like I just took a master class, truly.
I am.
Yeah.
Do you want to let everyone know what they can look forward to from you and Johnny? Like, I don't know. They know where they can find you, but anything you want to like plug, because we're a huge platform for you.
I would say just, you know, follow the AFA Universe on Instagram, and I think you'll be up to speed. Like, we have AFA Prime Talent, which is like our management company and stuff like that, but it's going to be a lot of things under that umbrella, I think, and that's definitely the vibe right now, you know, as far as like what I'm super duper excited about, because it will be the machine that is able to feed a lot of other, you know, various things that we've been working on for years as well. You know, like this whole podcasting thing, company, blah, blah, blah. So.
Fuck yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Then you can follow us. It feels weird doing this. At CKNY1213, at WTF Sup Pod.
And you can follow me at Nina Barnett on Instagram and at Neens Barnett on TikTok.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.